Chapter 28. In Malden. Just before first light, Fail was fastening the wide belt of golden links around her waist for the last time when Dairain entered the small, already crowded, peaked tent where they all slept. Outside, the sky would be starting to turn gray, but inside it might still have been night. Fail's eyes had adapted to the darkness, though. The slender little woman with black hair that spilled to her waist in waves was frowning around her yawns. She had stood just below the high seat of her house in Kyrian, but she had been wakened in the night because Savannah could not sleep and wanted to be read to. Savannah enjoyed Dairain's voice, and likely the tales she carried of supposed misdeeds among Savannah's Guy Shine. The Kyrianan woman was never chosen out as one of those who had failed to please. Her hands went to her golden collar, then hesitated when she took in Fail, Aleandra, and Magdin, already dressed and on their feet. "I forgot to put the book back in the proper place," she said in a voice like crystal chimes, turning back toward the tent flap. "Savannah will have me beaten if she sees it out of place when she wakes."
"She's lying," Magdin growled, and Dairain darted for outside.
That was enough to convince Fail. She grabbed the woman's cowl and hauled her back into the tent. Dairain opened her mouth to scream, but Aleandra clapped her hand over it, and the three of them wrestled the woman to the blanket-strewn groundcloth. It took all three. Dairain was small, but she writhed like a snake, tried to claw at them, to bite. While the other two held the woman down, Fail produced the second knife she had secured, a quite serviceable dagger with a ridged steel hilt and a blade longer than her hand, and began slicing strips from one of the blankets.
"How did you know?" Aleandra said, struggling to contain one of Dairain's arms while keeping her mouth covered without being bitten.
Magdin had taken care of the woman's legs by sitting on them and had her other arm twisted to her shoulder blades. Dairain still managed to twist, if uselessly. She was frowning, but when she spoke, her face went smooth. I could just make it out. If she were really worried about being beaten, she'd have frowned harder, not stopped. The golden-haired woman was not a very skilled lady's maid, yet she was a very observant one.
"But what made her suspicious?"
Magdin shrugged.
"Maybe one of us looked surprised or guilty, though I can't say how she could have noticed without any light."
Soon enough, they had Dairain trussed up with her ankles and wrists tied together behind her back. She would not wriggle far like that. A wadded length torn from her shift and tied in place with another piece of blanket served for a gag that let her emit only grunts. She twisted her head to glare up at them. Fail could not see her face very well, but the woman's expression had to be either glaring or pleading, and Dairain only pleaded with Shido. She used her position as one of Savannah's Guy Shine to bully Guy Shine who were not, and her tail carrying to bully those who were. The trouble was, they could not leave her here. Someone might come at any moment to summon one of them to serve Savannah.
"We can kill her and hide the body," Aleandra suggested,
smoothing her long hair that had become disarrayed in the struggle.
"Where?"
Magdin said, combing her own sun-gold hair with her fingers. She did not sound a lady's maid speaking to a queen. Prisoners were equals in their captivity, or else they aided their captors. It had taken time to teach Aleandra that.
"It has to be somewhere she won't be found for at least a day. Savannah might send men after Galena to bring us back if we're suspected of killing one of her belongings."
She vested that word with all the scorn it would bear.
"And I don't trust Galena not to let them bring us back."
Dairain began struggling against her bonds again and grunting harder than ever. Maybe she had decided to plead after all.
"We aren't going to kill her," Fail told them.
She was being neither squeamish nor merciful. There simply was nowhere they could be sure a body would remain hidden long enough, not that they could reach, without being seen.
"I'm afraid our plans have changed a little. Wait here."
Ducking outside, where the sky was indeed beginning to pearl, she found what had made Dairain suspicious. Bane and Chiat were there in their plain white robes, as expected, to escort them as far as the meeting place. Rolan and his friends might not be done breakfasting yet. She hoped they were not. They might do something foolish and ruin everything.
and Bane and Chiad had volunteered to divert any men who tried to interfere with them. She had not been able to make herself ask how they intended to do that. Some sacrifices deserved a veil of secrecy, and all of a heart's gratitude. Two Gaishine holding wicker baskets were not enough to rouse suspicion in the Kyrianan woman, but 30 or 40 Gaishine were crowding the narrow muddy lane through the Gaishine tents. Aravine's plump, plain face watched her from a white cowl, and Lusara's beautiful one. Alvon was there with his son Theril in their robes of muddy tent cloth, and Alinia, a plump Amadisian silversmith in dirty, coarse white linen, and Dorman, a stocky Kyrianan bootmaker, and Corvilla, a lean weaver from right here in Altara, and... They represented not a tenth part of those who had sworn to her, but a gathering of Gaishine this large would have planted suspicion in a stone, at least when added to the three of them being dressed. Dairane likely had heard who had been summoned to Savannah this morning. How had they learned she was leaving today? It was too late to worry about that. If any Shido knew, they would all have been dragged from the tent before this. "What are you doing here?" she demanded.
"We wanted to see you go, my lady," Theril said in his rough, barely intelligible accents. "We were very careful to come by ones and twos."
Lusara nodded happily, and she was not the only one. "Well, we can say goodbye now," Fael said firmly. No need to tell them how close they had come to ruining the escape. "Until I come back for you." If her father would not give her an army, then Perrin would. His friendship with Randall Thor would provide it. Light, where was he? No. She had to be glad he had not caught up yet, had not gotten himself killed trying to sneak into the camp and rescue her. She had to be glad and not think of what might be delaying him. "Now go, before someone sees you here and runs to tell tales. And don't talk to anyone about this." Her adherents were safe enough, otherwise she would already be chained. But there were too many like Dairane among the Gaishine, and not only among the long-held Kyrianan. Some people naturally set to licking wrists wherever they were. They bowed or curtsied or knuckled their foreheads just as if nobody might be poking their heads out to see, and scattered in every direction with chagrined expressions. They really had expected to watch her leave. She had no time to fritter away on exasperation. Hurrying to Bane and Chiad, she hastily explained the situation inside the tent. They exchanged glances when she finished and put down the baskets to free fingers for maiden hand talk. She avoided looking at their hands, since they plainly wanted privacy. Not that she could have understood much in any case. Their hands moved very fast. Flame-haired Bane, with her dark blue eyes, stood nearly half a hand taller than she, gray-eyed Chiad just a finger taller. They were her close friends, but they had adopted each other as first sisters, and that created bonds closer than any friendship. "We will take care of Dairane, Saigon," Chiad said at last, "but it means you must go into the town alone." Fael sighed, but there was no helping it. Perhaps Rolan was already awake. He could be watching her that minute. He always seemed to appear out of nowhere when she needed him. Surely he would not interfere with her leaving, not when he had promised to take her when he himself left. Yet he still had hopes, so long as she wore white. Him and his kissing games. He might want to keep her in Gaishine robes a little longer. When men wanted to help, they always thought their way was the only way. Bane and Chiad ducked into the small peaked tent, and Aleandra and Megden came out. There really was not room inside for five. Megden went around the side of the tent and returned with a basket like those the other women had been carrying. Dirty Gaishine robes bulged out of the top of each, making them appear loads of laundry, but beneath were dresses that came near enough fitting, a hatchet, a sling, cords for making snares, flint and steel, packets of flour, meal, dried beans, salt and yeast, a few coins they had been able to find, everything they would need to make their way west, to find Perrin. Galena would take them out of the camp, but there was no saying which direction her Aes Sedai business would take her then. They had to be self-reliant from the start. Fael would not put it past the Aes Sedai to abandon them as soon as she was able. Megden stood over her basket with an air of determination, her jaw set and her eyes firm, but Aleandra's face was wreathed in smiles. Try not to look so happy, Fael told her. Wetlander Geishine seldom smiled, and never so joyfully. Aleandra tried to moderate her expression, but every time she smoothed her smiles away, they crept back. We're escaping today, she said. It's hard not to smile. You'll stop if some wise one sees you and decides to find out why you're happy. We're hardly likely to meet a wise one among the Geishine tents or in Malden, the woman said through a smile. Determined or not, Megden nodded agreement. Fael gave up. In truth, she felt a little giddy herself in spite of Dairain. They were escaping today. Bane came out of the tent, holding the tent flap for Chiad, who was carrying on her back a blanket-wrapped bundle just large enough to be a small woman doubled up. Chiad was strong, but she had to lean forward a little to support the weight. Why is she so still? Fael asked. She had no fear they had killed Dairain. They were fierce about following the rules for Geishine, and violence was forbidden. But that blanket could have been full of wood for all that it moved. Bane spoke softly, an amused light in her eyes. I stroked her hair and told her I would be very upset if I had to hurt her. Simple truth, considering how much even slapping her would cost me. Chiad chuckled. I think Dairain's Saigon thought we were threatening her. I think she will be very quiet and very still until we let her go. She shook with silent laughter. Aiel's humor was still a mystery to Fael. She knew they would be punished severely for this, though. Aiding an escape attempt was dealt with as harshly as trying to escape. You have all my gratitude, she said. You and Chiad both, now and forever. I have great toe. She kissed Bane lightly on the cheek, which made the woman blush as red as her hair, of course. Aiel were almost prudishly restrained in public, in some ways. Bane glanced at Chiad, and a faint smile appeared on her lips. When you see Gaul, tell him Chiad is Geishine to a man with strong hands, a man whose heart is fire. He will understand. I need to help her carry our burden to a safe place. May you always find water and shade, Fael Bashir. She touched Fael's cheek lightly with her fingertips. One day we will meet again. Going over to Chiad, she took one end of the blanket, and they hurried away, carrying it between them. Gaul might understand, but Fael did not. Not the heart of fire, anyway, and she doubted that Mandarik's hands interested Chiad in the slightest. The man had bad breath and started getting drunk as soon as he woke unless he was going on a raid or hunting. But she put Gaul and Mandarik out of her mind and shouldered her basket. They had wasted too much time already. The sky was beginning to take on the appearance of actual daylight, and Geishine were stirring among the wildly diverse tents of the camp close on Malden's walls, scurrying off to be about some chore, or at least carrying something to give a semblance of working. But none paid any mind to three women in white carrying baskets of laundry toward the town's gates. There always seemed to be laundry to be done, even for Savannah's Geishine. There were far too many Wetlander Geishine for Fael to know everyone, and she saw no one she knew until they came on Arila and Lasile, shifting from foot to foot with baskets on their shoulders. Taller than most Aiel women and dark, Arila kept her black hair cut as short as any maiden and strode like a man when she walked. Lasile was short and pale and slim and had red ribbons tied in her hair, which was not much longer. Her walk was graceful in robes and had been a scandalous sway when she had worn breeches. Their sighs of relief were nearly identical, though. We thought something had happened, Arila said. Nothing we couldn't handle, Fael told her. Where are Bane and Chiad? Lasile asked anxiously. They have another task, Fael said. We go alone. They exchanged glances, and their sighs were far from relieved this time. Of course Rolan would not interfere. Not with them getting away. Of course not. The iron-strapped gates of Malden stood open, shoved back against the granite walls as they had since the city fell. Rust had turned the broad iron straps brown, and the hinges were so rusty that pushing the gates shut again might be impossible. Pigeons nested in the gray stone towers flanking them now. They were the first to arrive. At least, Fail could see no one ahead of them down the street. As they walked through the gates, she retrieved her dagger from the pocket inside her sleeve and held it with the blade pressed against her wrist, pointing up her arm. The other women made similar motions, if not so deftly. Without Bane and Chiad, and hoping that Rolan and his friends were otherwise occupied, they had to provide their own protection. Malden was not as dangerous for a woman, for a Gai Shain woman. Shido, who tried to prey on their own, got short shrift. Not as dangerous as the Shido portion of the camp, yet women had been assaulted there, sometimes by groups of men. The light send, if they were accosted, it was only by one or two. One or two they might catch by surprise and kill before they realized these Gai Shain had teeth. If there were more than two, they would do what they could, but an Aiel weaver or potter was as dangerous as most trained armsmen. Baskets or no baskets, they walked on their toes, heads swiveling, ready to spring in any direction. This part of the town had not been burned, yet it had a look of desolation. Broken dishes and pottery crunched beneath their soft white boots. Bits of clothing, cut off men and women made Gai Shain, still littered the gray paving stones. Those sorry, bedraggled rags had lain first in the snow and then in the rain for well over a month, and she doubted any rag picker would have gathered them now. Here and there lay children's toys, a wooden horse or a doll whose paint was beginning to flake, dropped by the very young who had been allowed to flee like the very old, the ill and infirm. Slate-roofed buildings of wood or stone along the street showed gaping holes where their doors and windows had been. Along with anything the Shido considered valuable or useful, the town had been stripped of every easily removable piece of wood, and only the fact that tearing down houses was less efficient than cutting firewood in the surrounding forests had spared the wooden structures themselves. Those openings minded Fail of eye sockets in skulls. She had walked along this street countless times, yet this morning they seemed to be watching her. They made her scalp crawl. Halfway across the town, she looked back toward the gates, no more than 150 paces behind. The street was still empty for the moment, but soon the first white-clad men and women would materialize with their water buckets. Fetching water was a task that began early and lasted all day. They had to hurry now. Turning down a narrower side street, she started to walk faster, although she had trouble keeping her basket balanced. The others must have been having the same difficulty, yet no one complained. They had to be out of sight before those Gai Shain appeared. There was no reason for any Gai Shain entering the town to leave the main street until they reached the cistern below the fortress. An attempt to curry favor or just a careless word could send Shido into the town hunting for them, and there was only one way out, short of climbing onto the walls and dropping 10 paces to the ground, hoping that no one broke a leg. At a now signless inn, 3 stories of stone and empty windows, she darted into the common room, followed by the others. Lucille set down her basket and pressed herself against the doorframe to keep watch up the street. The beam-ceilinged room was bare to the dusty floorboards, and the stone fireplaces were missing their andirons and fire tools. The railing had been stripped from the staircase at the back of the room, and the door to the kitchen was gone, too. The kitchen was just as empty. She had checked. Pots and knives and spoons were useful. Fail lowered her basket to the floor and hurried to the side of the staircase. It was a sturdy piece of work, of heavy timbers, and made to last for generations. Tearing it down would have been nearly as hard as tearing down a house. She felt underneath, along the top of the wide outer support, and her hand closed on the wrist-thick, not quite glassy rod. It had seemed as good a hiding place as she could find, a place no one would have any reason to look, but she was surprised to find she had been holding her breath. Lucille remained by the doorway, but the others hurried to Fail without their baskets. "At last," Aleandra said, gingerly touching the rod with her fingertips. "The price of our freedom. What is it?" "An Angreal," Fail said. "Or perhaps a Turangreal. I don't know for certain, except that Galena wants it very badly, so it must be one or the other." Megden put her hand on the rod boldly. "It could be either," she murmured. "They often have an odd feel. So I've been told, anyway." She claimed never to have been to the White Tower, but Fail was not so sure she once had been. Magden could channel, but so weakly and with so much difficulty that the wise ones saw no danger in letting her walk free. Well, as free as any Gaishine was. Her denials might well be a matter of shame. Fael had heard that women who had been put out of the tower because they could not become Aes Sedai sometimes denied ever having gone in order to hide their failure. Arala gave a shake of her head and backed away a step. She was Tyran, and, despite traveling with Aes Sedai, she was still uncomfortable over the power or anything to do with it. She looked at the smooth white rod as if at a red adder and licked her lips. Galena might be waiting on us. She might get angry if we make her wait long. Is the way still clear, Lasiel? Fael asked as she stuck the rod far down into her basket. Arala exhaled heavily, clearly as relieved at having the thing out of her sight as she had been to see Fael earlier. Yes, the Kyrianin replied. But I do not understand why. She still stood so that one eye could peek around the corner of the doorframe. The first Gaishine should be coming for water by now. Maybe something has happened in the camp, Magden said. Suddenly her face was grim, and her knife was in her hand, a wooden-handled affair with a chipped and pitted blade. Fael nodded slowly. Maybe something such as Dairain having been found already. She could not tell where Fael and the others had been going, but she might have recognized some among the waiting Gaishine. How long would they hold out, if put to the question? How long would Alvon hold out if Theril were? There's nothing we can do about it in any case. Galena will get us out. Even so, when they left the inn, they ran, carrying the baskets in front of them and trying to hold up their long robes so they did not trip. Fael was not the only one to look over her shoulder frequently and stumble. She was not sure whether or not she was relieved to finally see Gaishine carrying buckets on ropes drift across the crossing of the town's main street. She certainly did not slow down. They did not have far to run. In moments, the smell of charred wood that had faded from the rest of Maldon began to grow. The southern end of Maldon was a ruin. They halted at the edge of the devastation and edged around a corner so they would not be seen by anyone glancing down the street. From where they stood to the southern wall, near 200 paces, marched roofless shells with blackened stone walls interspersed with piles of charred beams, washed clean of ash by the rains. In places, not even the heaviest timbers remained. Only on the south side of this street were there any structures even close to whole. This was where the fire that raged after the Shido took the city had been finally stopped. Half a dozen buildings stood without roofs, though the lower floors looked intact, and twice as many were leaning piles of black timbers and half-burned boards that appeared on the edge of collapse. There, Magden said, pointing east along the street. A long length of red cloth fluttered in the breeze where she pointed. It was tied to a house that seemed ready to fall in. Walking to it slowly, they rested their baskets on the paving stones. The red cloth fluttered again. Why would she want to meet us here? Alejandra muttered. That could cave in if anybody sneezed. She rubbed at her nose as though the word had given her the urge. It is quite sound. I inspected it. Galena's voice behind them jerked Fael's head around. The woman was striding toward them, plainly from one of the sound buildings on the north side of the street. After so long seeing her in that belt and collar of gold and fire drops, she looked odd without them. She still wore her white silk robes, but the absence of the jewelry was convincing. Galena had not somehow managed to turn truth on its head. She was leaving today. Why not in one of the sound buildings? Fael demanded. Or right here? Because I don't want anyone to see it in my hands, Galena said, walking past her. Because no one will look inside that ruin. Because I say so. She stepped through what had been a doorway, ducking under a heavy, charred roof beam that slanted across the opening, and immediately turned to her right and began descending stairs. Don't dawdle. Fael exchanged looks with the other women. This was more than passing strange. If she'll get us out of here, Alejandra growled, snatching up her basket, I'm willing to hand her the thing in a privy. Still, she waited on Fael to pick up her own basket and lead the way. Charred timbers and blackened boards hung low over the stone stairs that led downward, but Galena's ease at entering reassured Fail. The woman would not risk being buried alive or crushed at the very moment she finally gained the rod. Bars and beams of light filtering through gaps in the wreckage gave enough illumination to show that the basement was quite clear, despite the treacherous nature of what lay above. Large barrels stacked along one stone wall, most scorched and with staves sprung from the heat, said that this had been an inn or a tavern, or perhaps a wine merchant's shop. The area around Malden had produced a great deal of mediocre wine. Galena stood in the middle of the grit-covered stone floor in a small beam of light. Her face was all Aes Sedai calm, her agitation of the previous day completely subdued. "Where is it?" she said coolly. "Give it to me." Fail set her basket down and shoved her hand deep inside. When she brought out the white rod, Galena's hands twitched. Fail extended the rod toward her, and she reached for it almost hesitantly. If she had not known better, Fail would have said she was afraid to touch it. Galena's fingers closed around the rod, and she exhaled heavily. She jerked the rod away before Fail could release it. The Aes Sedai seemed to be trembling, but her smile was triumphant. "How do you intend to get us away from the camp?" Fail asked. "Should we change our clothes now?" Galena opened her mouth, then suddenly raised her free hand, palm out. Her head tilted toward the stairs as if listening. "It may be nothing," she said softly, "but it's best if I check. Wait here and be quiet. Be quiet," she hissed when Fail started. Lifting the hem of her silk robes, the Aes Sedai scurried to the stairs and started up like a woman uneasy about what she might find at the top. Her feet passed out of sight behind the sagging boards and beams. "Did any of you hear anything?" Fail whispered. They all shook their heads. "Maybe she's holding the power. I've heard that can—" "She wasn't," Megden interrupted. "I've never seen her embracing—" Suddenly, wood groaned overhead, and with a thunderous crash, charred beams and boards collapsed, sending out blinding billows of and grit that sent Fail into paroxysms of coughing. The smell of charring suddenly was as thick in the air as it had been the day Malden burned. Something falling from above hit her shoulder hard, and she crouched, trying to protect her head. Someone cried out. She heard other falling objects hit the basement's stone floor, boards or pieces of boards. Nothing made a loud enough noise to be a roof beam or a heavy joist. Eventually, it seemed like hours, it might have been minutes, the rain of debris stopped. The dust began to thin. Quickly she looked around for her companions and found them all huddling on the floor with their arms around their heads. There seemed to be more light than before, a little more. Some of the gaps overhead were wider now. A trickle of blood ran down Alejandra's face from her scalp. Everyone was dusted with black from head to foot. "Is anyone injured?" Fail asked, finishing with a cough. The dust had not cleared completely, and her throat and tongue felt coated with it. The stuff tasted like charcoal. "No," Alejandra said, touching her scalp gingerly. "A scrape, that's all." The others denied injury as well, though Arala seemed to be moving her right arm carefully. No doubt they had all suffered bruises, and Fail thought her left shoulder was going to be black and blue shortly, but she would not count that a real injury. Then her eyes fell on the stairs, and she wanted to weep. Wreckage from above filled the whole space where the staircase had been. They might have been able to squeeze through some of the gaps overhead. Fail thought she could reach them, standing on Arala's shoulders, but she doubted she could pull herself through with one good arm, or that Arala could. And if either managed, she would be in the middle of a burned-out ruin and likely as not make the rest of the thing fall in, too. "No," Alejandra moaned. "Not now! Not when we were so close!" Rising, she rushed as near to the rubble as she could get, almost pressing against it, and began to shout. "Galena, help us! We're trapped! Channel and lift the boards away! Clear a path for us to get out! Galena! Galena! Galena!" She sagged against the tangle of timbers, shoulders shaking. "Galena," she wept. "Galena, help us!" "Galena's gone," Fael said bitterly. The woman would have answered if she was still above or had any intention of aiding them. With us trapped down here, maybe dead, she has the perfect excuse for leaving us behind. Anyway, I don't know whether an Aes Sedai could move some of those timbers if she tried. She did not want to mention the possibility that Galena had arranged that excuse herself. Light. She should never have slapped the woman. It was too late for self-recrimination, though.
What are we going to do now? Arala asked.
Dig ourselves out, Fael and Magdan said at the same instant. Fael looked at the other woman in surprise. Her maid's dirty face wore a queen's resolve.
Yes, Alejandra said, straightening.
She turned around, and if runnels of tear tracks marked the dust on her face, no new tears appeared. She really was a queen and could not like being shamed by the courage of a lady's maid.
We'll dig ourselves out, and if we fail, I will not die wearing this.
Unfastening her golden belt, she flung it contemptuously into a corner of the basement. Her golden collar followed.
We'll need those to make our way through the Shido camp, Fael said gently.
Galena may not be taking us out, but I intend leaving today.
Dairane made that imperative.
Bane and Chiad could not keep her hidden long.
Or as soon as we can dig out, anyway.
We'll pretend we've been sent to pick berries. She did not want to step on her liege woman's bold gesture, though. However, we don't need to wear them now. Removing her belt and collar, she righted her basket and set them atop the dirty Gaishine robes. The others emulated her. Alejandra retrieved her own belt and collar with a rueful laugh. At least she could laugh again. Fael wished she could. The jumble of charred timbers and half-burned boards filling the staircase resembled one of those blacksmith's puzzles her Perrin enjoyed. Almost everything seemed to be propping up something else. Worse, the heavier timbers might be beyond all of them working together. But if they could clear enough for them to be able to crawl through, writhing between the thick beams, it would be dangerous, that crawl. But when a dangerous path was your only route to safety, you had to take it. A few boards came away easily and were piled at the back of the basement, but after that everything had to be chosen with care, examined to see whether anything would fall if it were removed, hands feeling back as far as they could go into the tangle, groping for nails that might have caught, trying not to think about the whole pile shifting and trapping an arm, crushing it. Only then could they begin pulling, sometimes two of them together, tugging harder and harder until the piece suddenly gave. That work went slowly, with the great pile occasionally groaning or shifting slightly. Everyone darted back, holding their breath when that happened. Nobody moved again until they were sure the snarl of timbers was not going to collapse. The work became the focus of their world. Once Fael thought she heard wolves howling. Wolves generally made her think of Perrin, but not this time. The work was all. Then Alejandra wrenched a charred board free, and with a great groan the mass began to shift toward them. Everyone ran toward the back of the basement as the pile fell in with a deafening rumble, sending up more billows of dust. When they stopped coughing and could see again, dimly, with dust still hanging in the air, perhaps a quarter of the basement was filled. All of their work undone, and worse, the jumble was leaning toward them precariously. Groaning, it sagged a little more toward them and stopped. Everything about it said the first board pulled free would bring the whole mass down on their heads. Arala began to cry softly. Tantalizing gaps admitted sunlight and allowed them to see the street, the sky, but nothing anyone could wriggle through, even Lucille. Fael could see the red scarf Galena had used to mark the building. It fluttered for a moment in the breeze. Staring at the scarf, she seized Magdan's shoulder.
I want you to try to make that scarf do something the wind wouldn't make it do.
You want to attract attention? Alejandra said hoarsely. It's far more likely to be Shido than anyone else.
Better that than dying down here of thirst, Fael replied, her voice harsher than she wanted.
She would never see Perrin again, then.
If Savannah had her chained, she would at least be alive for him to rescue.
He would rescue her, she knew it.
Her duty now was to keep the women who followed her alive. And if that meant captivity, so be it. Megden? I might spend all day trying to embrace the source and never succeed, the sun-haired woman said in dull tones. She stood slumped, staring at nothing. Her face suggested that she saw an abyss beneath her feet. And if I do embrace it, I can almost never weave anything. Fael loosened her grip on Megden and smoothed her hair instead. I know it's difficult, she said soothingly. Well, in truth, I don't know. I've never done it. But you have, and you can do it again. Our lives depend on you, Megden. I know the strength that's in you. I've seen it time and again. There is no surrender in you. I know you can do it, and so do you. Slowly, Megden's back straightened, and despair slid off her face. She might still see the abyss, but if she fell, she would fall without flinching. I'll try, she said. For a long while, she stared up at the scarf, then shook her head dejectedly. The source is there, like the sun just beyond the edge of sight, she whispered. But every time I try to embrace it, it's like trying to catch smoke with my fingers. Fael hastily pulled the Gaishine robes from her basket and another, careless of the gold belts and collars falling to the stone floor. Sit down, she said, arranging the robes in a pile. Make yourself comfortable. I know you can do it, Megden. Pressing the other woman down, she folded her legs and sat beside her. You can do it, Aleandra said softly, sitting down on Megden's other side. Yes, you can, Lucille whispered, joining them. I know you can, Arala said, as she lowered herself to the floor. Time passed, with Megden staring at the scarf. Fael whispered encouragement and held on to hope hard. Suddenly the scarf went rigid, as if something had pulled it taut. A wondrous smile appeared on Megden's face as the scarf began to swing back and forth like a pendulum. 6, 7, 8 times it swung. Then it fluttered in the breeze and fell limp. That was marvelous, Fael said. Marvelous, Aleandra said. You're going to save us, Megden. Yes, Arala murmured. You're going to save us, Megden. There were many kinds of battle. Sitting on the floor, whispering encouragement, Megden fighting to find what she could seldom find, they fought for their lives while the scarf swung, then fell to the breeze, swung and fell limp. But they fought on. Galena kept her head down and tried not to hurry as she made her way out of Malden, past the streams of white-clad men and women carrying empty buckets into the town and full buckets back out. She did not want to attract attention, not without that cursed belt and necklace. She had donned the things when she dressed in the night while Thorava was still asleep, but it had been such a pleasure to remove them and hide them with the clothes and other things she had secreted away for her escape that she could not resist. Besides, Thorava would have been angered to wake and find her missing. She would have ordered a watch for her little Lena, and everyone marked her by those jewels. Well, they would pay to help her return to the tower now. Return to her rightful place. That arrogant Fael and the other fools were dead or as good as, and she was free. She stroked the rod, hidden in her sleeve, and shivered with delight. Free. She did hate leaving Thorava alive, but if anyone had entered the woman's tent and found her with a knife through her heart, Galena would have been the first suspect. Besides, images rose in her head of her bending stealthily over the sleeping Thorava, the woman's own belt knife in hand, of Thorava's eyes snapping open, meeting hers in the darkness, of her screaming, of her hand opening nervelessly to drop the knife, of her begging, of Thorava... No, no! It would not have been that way, certainly not. She had left Thorava alive of necessity, not because she was... not for any other reason. Suddenly wolves howled. Wolves in every direction, a dozen or more. Her feet stopped of their own accord. A motley collection of tents surrounded her. Walled tents, peaked tents, low Aiel tents. She had walked right through the Gaishine portion of the camp without realizing it. Her eyes rose to the ridge west of Malden and she flinched. Thick fog curled along the whole length of it, concealing the trees as far as she could see in either direction. The town walls hid the ridge to the east, yet she was sure there would be thick fog there, too. The man had come. The great lord preserve her, she had been just in time. Well, he would not find his fool wife, even if he managed to survive whatever he was about to try. Nor would he find Galina Kazban. Thanking the great lord that Tharava had not forbidden her to ride, the woman had much preferred dangling the possibility that she might be allowed if she groveled sufficiently. Galina hurried toward her hidden stores. Let the fools who wanted to die here die. She was free. Free!